From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. It's Here and Now. Coming up, now that former Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell has been found guilty of corruption, should that put other state politicians on guard?
But first to today's jobs report from the Labor Department. It said the U.S. economy only added 142,000 jobs in August. That's the slowest pace this year and well below what most economists were expecting. The government also revised down by 28,000 the number of jobs added in June and July. The unemployment rate fell from 6.2 to 6.1%. But the report is sparking debate about whether the economy is losing steam again. Diane Swonk, chief economist at Mesirow Financial, is with us from New York. Diane, welcome.
It's good to be here.
Well, what's your reaction to these job numbers? Is this a bad report?
It's a bad report. If I believed all of it, I'd have to also believe that pigs fly. It's a bad report in terms of the data as well. It's not accurate. We do know that there were some hits in retail because of a strike. Also, the auto industry was up and running in July when they usually close down. And so they didn't come back in August as the seasonally adjusted numbers expected. That messed up the data as well. But this number was so screwy that actually some of the subsectors within the data on the government sector in particular, which you'd think they could count their own payrolls, they actually didn't add up. It looks like they didn't have a calculator, which is really strange.
So you don't see much to take away from this at all then? The 142,000 jobs you're saying is probably going to be revised and not accurate.
Exactly. It's a fluke. It's an outlier rather than a trend, a new trend of shifting down. That said, you know, let's get the perspective on this for the Federal Reserve. It does clip the wings of some hawks who'd like to raise interest rates sooner rather than later and make their voices heard. The Federal Reserve cannot move on interest rates until they really see the road ahead clear. And we're far from the road ahead being really clear on the labor market. Unemployment is still too high, even at 6.1%. And, you know, I really am kind of confused when I see some people saying, well, it's so tight. The reason that these numbers are low is that employers just can't find people they want. I've seen a lot of qualified workers out there who still can't get jobs. And if they really were looking hard to hire, they'd raise wages a lot more.
So how would you describe the job picture in this country right now?
It's better than it was, still not good enough. And unfortunately, that's a rut we've been caught in since the start of the year. We did have those winter doldrums. Caught up from that, that's good news. I think we're going to see some better numbers before the end of the year. But again, it's kind of like we've been in these traffic jams and we got a little bit of a pass and moved a little faster in the spring and then hit a bit of a, you know, pothole. If this is to be a real pothole, my guess is it will be revised away. But the bottom line is the road ahead still isn't clear. And when you're in a traffic jam, even though technically we're moving forward and we're adding jobs to the U.S. economy, you don't feel too good about it. You get really frustrated in a traffic jam. And I think that's what you're seeing in the polls. Americans are saying we're a little more confident about the economy than we were. But in general, it's not like anything we ever used to know.
Well, what should it be right now? We're now almost 6 years after the financial crisis. We've been adding about 200,000 jobs to the economy each month, at least in the last several months. Where would you like this to be in an ideal world? What would we be adding?
Well, in an ideal world, if this really were tight labor markets where these employers, you know, are having a hard time, you'd be seeing wages accelerate much faster than 2.1%, more like 4 or 5%. You'd also be seeing 400,000, 500,000 jobs a month because they would be hiring. Back in the 1990s, we do remember what a tight labor market was like, and that was when anyone who had a pulse got hired. In fact, you know, I have to sort of laugh. People say there's this mismatch in the labor market. They argued the same things during the Great Depression. When they want to hire, they do hire.
I want to get to another report that's out today from the Federal Reserve, data confirming that the gap between rich and poor Americans actually widened over the last 3 years. Can you tell us about your reaction to that report and any other interesting details you saw in it?
You know, that was a really important report. The Survey of Consumer Finances is one of the most broad-based reports that we have on how consumers are doing. And what it really showed is not only the gap between the poorest and the richest, but also the inability to catch up. There was some catch up from, you know, for people having their home prices reappreciate, but they're still not back at the peak level. And unless you're really the wealthiest, you haven't done it very well. What was interesting was how much student debt and the change in student debt. We know we've seen a big move up in student debt. We actually saw saw also a move up in average balances, that beyond just median balances of student debt going up, there also was a real surge in people using graduate school debt. And that's something you really worry about, because these people in the past would have been able to buy a home, move up, and accumulate wealth in the United States. Now they're not. They're young people who are very highly educated with a lot of debt, and that is setting them back even further just by the sheer fact they were born at the wrong time and graduated into the wrong economy.
So you see student debt as one of the key problems with wage growth in this country?
If you add student debt and the fact we have more of it with lagging wages, particularly for recent college grads, this is the longest we've seen, the biggest gap between new entrant wages and wages overall in the U.S. economy. So those new college grads are not getting paid what other college grads were for the longest period of time. That means it's going to take a long time for them to service that debt. It also is part of the reason why the delinquencies are so high, because even when they have money, they don't have enough to service their debt, and they can't buy a home. They've got too much of an overhang of student debt, or if they've defaulted, they can never qualify for a mortgage or a vehicle loan. So it really is a very difficult situation for many families. And what that survey of consumer finances highlighted was not only how uneven the recovery has been, how many people feel more stressed today than they were prior to the recession.
Well, and bring that back full circle for us. What does inequality mean for growth in this country?
It actually means slower growth, not only political instability where people are angry for good reason. It also means slower growth. We've actually seen the breakdown of that. While the very highest income strata spends a lot of money on health care, tuition, vehicles on a monthly basis, where the lowest income strata, one of their highest expenses is transfers, not transfers from the government to them, but alimony payments, charity payments, or payments to other people in their household. And I think that's very important, as you see these lower income households are really having a harder time making ends meet, not only because their wages have stagnated or actually deteriorated in terms of their household income, but they're supporting more people than they did in the past and transferring that money to other people in their family rather than buying things outright. That actually has an impact on overall consumption as well.
Diane Swonk, Chief Economist with Mesirow Financial. Diane, thank you so much.
Thank you.